day after tomorrow. So there is a request that if you come on time, then you can get more nectar drops from the Ramayana. Right? So 7 o'clock normally we want to start. So please come as soon as possible. Okay. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Praneshwar Prabhu, for your kind words. So, I welcome all of you to this evening program and express my gratitude to you for taking time out in your busy schedules to discuss about how the Lord comes in this world to help us achieve the ultimate goal of our own lives, which is the quest for happiness. So, let's recite a verse from the Venkatesh Stotra, which is a glorification of Lord Ram. Sukham saradam sulabham sukhadam. Sukham suradam sulabham sukhadam. Svanijam cha sukaya mamoghasharam. Svanijam cha sukaya mamoghasharam. Apahaya raghodvahamanyamaham. Apahaya raghodvahamanyamaham. Na kathancha na kancha na jatu bhaje. Kancha na jatu bhaje. So it's a very sweet verse. Sumukham. The Lord has a very attractive lotus-like face. Now there are many people in this world who are attractive, but they may be very deceptive inside. The Lord has not only attractive face, but He has a very attractive heart. Sumukham saradam. In the Bhagavad Gita 5.29, Lord Krishna is declared as Saradam Sarvabhutana. So same word comes here. And now if somebody has very good looking and good natured, such a person is very rare. When you describe the Lord as Sulabham, it's very easy to attain. And if we attain that Lord, if we strike a relationship with Him, that relationship is supremely fruitful. It will grant us Sukhadam, happiness. And that Lord is accompanied by His brother. Svanajam cha sukayam. Sukaya. Kaya means body. So, not only His face is beautiful, His whole form is beautiful. And not only is it just beautiful, but it's also powerful. Amogha sharam. Sharam means arrow. Amogha. Mogha means to go waste. In 3rd chapter, Lord 16th verse, Lord Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita, that those who live for sense gratification, aghayur indriyaramo mogham partha sajivati. So mogha means they live in waste. So amogha, when the Lord shoots arrow, that arrow never goes to waste. So when there is such a wonderful Lord who is so beautiful, so good-natured, so powerful, then apahaya raghudvaham anyamaham. Apahaya means to leave aside. Leaving aside such a wonderful Lord, raghudvaham, who has appeared in the dynasty of Raghu. How can I will never worship any other Lord. Na kathanchana kanjana jatu. So, na kathanchana kanjana jatu. Thrice is the same thing as emphasized. He is the only Lord that I will worship. So, we'll recite a couple of times. Then we'll recite the prayers and then we can start the discussion. Sumukham surudam sulabham sukhadam. Sumukham surudam sulabham sukhadam. Svanujam cha sukaya mamoghasharam. Jam cha sukaya mamoghasharam. Apahaya raghudvaham anyamaham. Apahaya raghudvaham anyamaham. Na kathancha na kancha na jatu bhaje. Na kancha na jatu bhaje. Sumukham surudam sulabham sukhadam. Sumukham surudam sulabham sukhadam. Svanujam cha sukaya mamoghasharam. Jasukaya mamoghasharam. Apahaya raghudvaham anyamaham. Apahaya raghudvaham anyamaham. Na kathancha na kancha na jatu bhaje. Na kancha na jatu bhaje. Om jnanati mirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Maiham Dadati Swapadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauratvishe Namaha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindhubhyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Krishna. So before we start, can I know how many of you are chanting 16 rounds? Okay. How many of you are chanting between 8 to 16 rounds? Okay. Any of you coming for the first time today? Okay. Oh, thank you. So, thank you. So now, when we discuss about Ramayana, let's start by discussing about the sources. Now, Ramlila is described in many literatures. The foundational, the original, the seminal literature is the Valmiki Ramayana. It's a huge book. The Srimad Bhagavatam itself is 18,000 verses. The Valmiki Ramayana is 24,000 verses. It's a classic. And subsequently, there have been descriptions of Ramlila in many other places. So in the Puranas, in the Brahmanda Puran, there is the Adhyatma Ramayana. Apart from that, in Vishnu Puran, Padma Puran, Lord Ram's pastimes are described. Then, various poets and devotees of Lord Ram have sung the pastimes of Lord Ram, have written poetic or prose compositions about Lord Ram, in their local vernacular languages. Those are called the retellings of Ramayana. And then there are many acharyas who have written commentaries, that means taking each verse of the Ramayana and writing commentaries, just as the Prabhupada wrote his Bhagavad Gita as it is, on the Bhagavad Gita. And it's something similar to Krishna Leela. Now in Krishna Leela also, the original source is the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the Srimad Bhagavatam has 335 chapters, out of which 90 are devoted to Krishna Leela and to the 10th canto, where Krishna Leela is described. So in those 90 chapters, there are 40 chapters of Vrindavan Leela, 10 chapters of Mathura Leela, and 40 chapters of Dwarka Leela. And apart from that, Krishna Leela also comes in the Puranas. As we see, Radharani is glorified quite explicitly in the Padma Purana. There are acharyas who have written commentaries on the 10th canto, like Vishwanath Chakra Thakur has written his Sarvartha Darshini. Sanatana Goswami has written his Vrid Vaishnava Toshini, and several other acharyas. Bhakti Sanatana Thakur wrote his Bhagavati Vritti. And even the acharyas have told the pastimes again with some greater details as per the revelation. So Gopal Champu and Anandavan Champu are books like that. So now we worship Lord Krishna. And Lord Ram is especially significant for us even when we are devotees of Lord Krishna. There is a book written by Srila Rupa Goswami called as Laghu Bhagavatamrita. In this book, Rupa Goswami describes that among all the multifarious incarnations of the Lord, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the first canto, it's described that there are as many incarnations as there are waves in the ocean, which means countless. Why does the Lord incarnate so many times? Because His love for us is unlimited. You know, many of the other religions in the world have a singular contact between God and this world. There's one prophet, one messiah, one revelation. This severely limits God's love. You know, if God is unlimited, why should His love, why should the access to Him be limited to only one personality or one path or one revelation? No. The Vedic scriptures describe that nothing can limit God's love. Nothing. So, God comes many, many times. Sambhavami yuge yuge. As this famous verses 4.78 Lord Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita. So, all these incarnations come and perform very sweet pastimes. And their mission is threefold as is described in the Bhagavad Gita. Paritranaya sadhana, vinashaya duskritam, dharma samsthapana arthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. So, Rupa Goswami describes that among all these incarnations, the two incarnations, Narasimha Dev and Ramachandra, are special. In the spiritual world, there is Goloka Vrindavan, then there is Ayodhya, and then there are the Vaikuntha planets. So, for example, Varaha Dev or Vaman Dev, when they incarnate, they also deliver the world from demoniac influences. But the extent of the reciprocation between them and their devotees is relatively limited. In Narasimha Leela and Ram Leela, it is much more. And especially Ram Leela helps us to understand the sweetness of devotion in the mood of a servant. Often, in the material world, to become a servant is considered to be a very degrading, demeaning thing. But how it can be very sweet and fulfilling is revealed in the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra in his interactions with his devotees. So now, Srila Madhvacharya explains that we can learn from these pastimes at three levels. One is the literal historical level. That means these pastimes occurred in the distant past. Charitam Raghunathasya Shatakoti Pravastaram Ekaikam Aksharam Mumsam Mahapatakanashanam. In the glorification of Ramayana described that the Charitam Raghunathasya, the character of Lord Ram, has been described in Shatakoti Pravastaram. It has been expanded into hundreds and crores of syllables and verses. And every one of these verses, Ekaik Aksharam Pumsam, every one of these syllables is so powerful, Mahapataka Nashanam. It can destroy enormous sins and their reactions. So just by hearing these pastimes as historical events that took place in the distant past, we become purified. In addition to that, there are also ethical lessons that we can learn. Ethical or moral lessons means when we observe that the Radhana became greedy. Although he had his own share of the kingdom, he wanted more than his own share. And how his greed ruined him. Or how Ravana, although he had his own wives, he became lusty for somebody else's wife. And how it ruined him. So, we learn ethical lessons from the scripture. And beyond that, there are also metaphorical lessons. When Lord performs an activity, it has multiple significances. So, there are some people in India who try to say that the whole itihasas, the itihasas of Ramayana and the Mahabharata, they are entirely symbolic. Actually, no war took place at Kurukshetra. It is all symbolic. No. It's historical. The place called Kurukshetra is still there on the coast of Dwarka. Marine archaeologists have found the remains of an ancient and magnificent city. So it's historical. But it's not just historical. It's historical, and we can learn ethical dimensions from it, and there are also deeper significances from it. For example, when Lord Krishna appears right at midnight in this world, what does it signify? You know, midnight is when the night is becoming thicker and deeper, and that time the Lord appears and illumines the presences. So like that, when our material life becomes very dark, at that time we turn to the Lord and the Lord appears in our heart. So there are deeper significances also to the activities of the Lord. So we can learn at all these levels. I'm sorry. Now, we will focus on the ethical dimension here, and we'll talk about relationships. So we'll discuss the dynamics of relationships between three sets of personalities. So there are two brothers and their interactions, there are three brothers and their interactions, and there are four brothers. Can any of you guess who are the two brothers? No, there are four brothers. Ram, Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna. So they are in the last category. We'll be discussing about them on the third day. Who are the two brothers? Yes, Vali and Sugriv. Of course, Krishna and Balaram are in Ram and Krishna Lila. And who are the three brothers? Yes, Ravana, Kumbhakarna, and Vibhishana. So, let's start with the two brothers today. So now, Vali and Sugriv are an example of a classic yet tragic case where the best of friends ended up becoming the worst of enemies. And that enmity was resolved only by the death of one of them. So you know, in this world, among all the things that we need for happiness, we need food, we need clothing, we need shelter, we need some amount of respectability in society. But the most important of all these things is relationships. Now, without satisfying relationships, all the wealth in this world would be meaningless. And yet, relationships are probably the cause of the greatest suffering for most people. You know, not many people commit suicide because of just bodily pain. But when there are heartbreaks, when there are emotional traumas, letdowns and disappointments, that can cause tremendous, intolerable pain. So, you can come ahead. So relationships are very important. And spiritual life is not just otherworldly, where we live all these relationships of the world and just go out in search of God. No, our relationships with God depend also on our relationships with the individuals in this world. So let's see how such eventuality actually took place. So, a little background. Can we arrange for some more chairs? I think some more devotees may come. Okay, thank you. Hare Krishna. So, the Ramayana has, Valmiki Ramayana has seven sections which are called as khandas. In the Bhagavatam it is called as cantos. So, the first is the Bala Kanda, the childhood pastime, and then there is Ayodhya Kanda, then Aranya Kanda, then there is the Kishkinda Kanda, then there is the Sundar Kanda, then there is the Yuddha Kanda, and the last is the Uttar Kanda. So in the Uttarakhand, in Yuddhakhand, Rama's demise takes place and Ram and Sita united, reunited rather. In the Uttarakhand, Lord Ram asks Agastya and other sages who have come to his palace, you know, I observed during the battle that Sugriva was the commander of the Vanaras and he was powerful. But I observed that Hanuman was even more powerful than Sugriva. Then how is it that Hanuman became assistant of Sugriva? And in my experience, I feel Hanuman was more powerful even than Vali. Vali, I was able to slay just a single arrow. But Hanuman's prowess, he jumped across the ocean, he fought even against Kumbhakarna and Ravana and checked them. So his prowess was much greater. So how is it that when Vali exiled Sugriva, at that time Hanuman did not stop Vali? So then Agastya, she starts telling the background stories. So actually Vali and Sugriva are the expansions of the gods. Vali is the son of Indra and Sugriva is the son of Surya. So Hanuman in his childhood, He was phenomenally powerful, but he was also phenomenally mischievous. And Krishna's mischiefs were loved by everyone because he was in Vrindavan. There all the gopas and gopis were there. But Hanuman was in Kishkinda, where all around him were sages. And he would have committed aparadha to all those sages by his mischief. So then the sages didn't want to curse him, and still they want, at the same time they wanted to check him from his mischief. So they cursed him that he would forget his prowess till he was reminded of that prowess. And on the banks of the Indian, on the coast of the Indian Ocean, where none of the monkeys were equal to the task of jumping 100 yojanas, at that time, Jambam reminded Hanuman of his own potential. And then Hanuman's role in the Sundarkand, actually, Hanuman enters into Ramayana in the Kishkindakand. But there he is in a subordinate role. But once he takes on his prowess in the Sundarkand, then practically he is the second hero who is almost competing with Ram. Of course, he is not competing with Ram because he is not with Ram. But he is central and loud character in the Ramayana. So, Agastya Rishi describes that actually, at that time when Vali exiled Sugriva, at that time Hanuman had not yet been reminded of his prowess. So then he describes that Hanuman was actually a very eager student of Suryadev. Lord Bhavaswan has as his spiritual master Lord Krishna himself, as it is described in the Bhagavad Gita, 4th chapter, 1st verse. Imam vivasvate yogam proktavanam avyayam. Lord Krishna described, I described this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god. So Hanuman thought that if I want to have a teacher, if I can't have the Supreme Lord, I'm the best teacher, let me have a direct student of the Supreme Lord. So then he went to the sun god. Now, you know, modern science sees things very superficially. Just like, you know, if an uneducated village rustic sees a plane flying in the sky, he will think, oh, how is this object flying in the sky without flapping its wings? What kind of bird is it? Just think it's a metallic object. But a more educated vision sees that within that metallic object there is a person. Although that person may not be visible to our naked vision, but there is a person. So like that, modern science sees the sun just as a sizzling mass of fire where helium is turning into hydrogen or whatever. Their explanations keep varying. But that, even if it is true, that is only a superficial explanation. Just like, you know, suppose from a mechanistic, that means from a purely scientific point of view, somebody wants to understand, okay, there was a car in the garage, and then why did it start moving now? So you go back and you say, okay, the car started moving because the wheels were moving. Okay, why were the wheels moving? Oh, because the axle caused it to move. Why did the axle cause it to move? Oh, because there was a spark in the ignition. But why was there a spark in the ignition? Oh, the key, which was vertical, became horizontal. Yes, the car started moving because the key moved from the vertical to the horizontal position. It's a correct explanation, but it's a pathetically incomplete explanation. So, like that, to say that the heat of the sun, Krishna describes, Bhavatyagatam tejo jagat bhasyate akhilam. In 15.11 he says that this is one light. You know, we have so many lights for such a small group. But there is one light which illuminates the whole universe. So, if for this light, you know, we need so much design and maintenance, what about the one switch that illuminates the whole universe? It's very superficial to say that it's just a sizzling, blazing mass of fire. Because there is a personality behind that. And that is the sun god. So, this Vivaswan is a very learned person. And Hanumanji went to Vivaswan to get education from him. And Vivaswan said, you know, a student and teacher has to sit and discuss. Just like we are sitting and discussing. You know, I am always moving, so how can I teach you? So Hanuman said, no, that's not a problem. I will also keep moving with you. So he said, I'll move at your pace and I will be walking backwards. I'll be beholding you and I'll be hearing from you. So he said, I don't think it's possible. He said, you don't worry. You just teach. And then Suryadev started teaching. And Hanuman learned from him. And learned so brilliantly. Actually, for a sincere teacher, the greatest joy of his life is a sincere student. He doesn't want payment, he doesn't want fame. Actually, the knowledge that he wants to share, if somebody is there to receive it, that is the greatest joy for a teacher. So Suryadeva felt so happy with Hanuman's eagerness to learn. And then finally, when Hanuman finished his education, Hanuman asked him, what Guru Dakshina can I give you? So Sun God said that, actually to have a student like you, that is the greatest joy of a teacher like me. You know, your sincerity in learning itself is a Guru Dakshina. So Hanuman said, thank you for your kind words. Now, but from my side, please don't deprive me of the opportunity, of the service of giving you a Guru Dakshina. Please tell me, what can I give you? And he said, you know, my expansion, my son has appeared among the Vanaras as Sugriva. So kindly be by his side, assist him and protect him. And that's how Hanuman became an assistant of Sugriva. And Sugriva himself was very powerful. But if you see among devatas also, there's a taratamya. Taratamya means classification. So Indra is the chief of the gods. So Indra is that way superior to Surya. And that's why when Rahu or Ketu come to attack Indra, to attack Surya, then they go to Indra. Or Hanuman as a small baby thought that the sun is an apple. He went to catch it. So the sun went to whom? Indra. And then Indra threw his thunderbolt. So that's why Vali, the expansion of Indra, was more powerful than Sugriva. Although both of them were formidably powerful. And Rikshiraj was the king of the Vanaras to whom they were born. The Vanaras should not be mistaken to be ordinary monkeys. You know, they are celestial apes. They are extremely powerful. Actually, in the hierarchy, the Vanaras come above the humans, both in physical strength and in intellectual capacity. So, of course, the Vanaras were the kings or the leaders of the monkeys that inhabit the planet currently also. But they are not like the monkeys that we see on this planet currently. So when Rikshiraj decided to dedicate his life to higher pursuits, then Vali became the king and Sugriva became his assistant. So they were an unbeatable duo. And wherever they would go, they would always go together. So at one time, a demon named Mayavi, very proud of his strength, came to challenge Vali. He came outside Kishkindha and screamed out, Vali, where are you? You coward, why are you staying inside your palace? Come out and I will kill you. So Vali came out, and just by seeing the size of Vali, that Mayavi became frightened. And Vali was not alone, along with the Sugriva. And he thought, this one is bad enough, two is incredible. He just ran away. And then Vali started running after him. And they were running. And finally, Mayavi realized, I cannot escape. So he just jumped into a cave, an underground sort of cave. And Vali came there. And Vali said to Sugriva, I will go inside. You stay here. Sugriva said, let me go inside with you. It's a dark cave. You know, we do not know what is there inside. Probably this monkey knows, this demon knows what is there inside. Says, no, you stay here. In case there's some other way while she's escaping, then you can check him. And they bound him by oath, stay here till I come back. And then Sugriva waited 1 day, 2 day, 1 week, 1 month, 1 year he was waiting. And finally, after 1 year, he heard the loud roaring of that demon. And he started seeing blood foaming out of the cave. He became very thoughtful and pensive. There was no sound of Vali. He thought that Vali has been overpowered and killed. And he started thinking, if this demon is so powerful that he could kill Vali, then I don't stand a chance of defeating him. And if we don't check him, he will become the scourge of the world. So therefore, let me trap him inside this cave. And he took a huge, not just a stone or a rock or a boulder, he took a crag of a mountain, a huge piece of a mountain, and covered the cave, exerting his full prowess. And dejected, he came back to Kishkindha. And there was a royal period of lamentation for the death of Vali. And then the ministers told that a kingdom without a king is extremely insecure. It may be destroyed internally by thieves and externally by enemies. And Angad is too young right now. Angad is the son of Vali. Says, you have to become the king. Reluctantly, Sugriva obliged. And within a few days, Vali marched into the kingdom, into the palace, into the court. And he was bruised, exhausted, but furious. As soon as Sugriva saw him, Sugriva got off the throne and went and fell at the feet of Vali. And he said, I am so relieved, I am so delighted to see you alive. Now this throne belongs to you. Actually, just by seeing the glare of Vali, Sugriva understood what Vali is suspecting. And he wanted to allay his suspicion. He told him that the throne is just for you. We thought that you had been killed by that demon. That's why reluctantly I accepted the throne. You please accept the throne and I'll be the servant. As I have always been. Vali just kicked Sugriva away and said, you traitor, you wanted to usurp the throne. And that's why you trapped me inside that cave. He says, I searched throughout the cave and after 1 year I found that demon. And I was exerting my full energy in beating and killing the demon. And that's why I did not utter any sound at that time. And you wretch, you trapped me inside, but you underestimated my power. I pushed aside that boulder, came out, and today I will punish you. He did not hear one word that Sugriva said. And he said, I should have killed you, but I banish you. Get out of here. And Sugriva had to flee for his life. And Hanuman and three other Vanaras went with him. Now, if we look at it from the point of view of Sugriva, what he did was perfectly right. And if we look at it from the point of Vali, what he felt was perfectly right. Now, why is he not there at the door? Not only is he not there at the door, he has locked the door. And then on top of that, when I come back to the palace, I find that he is sitting on my throne. So, you know, how can both people think that I am right and still only one of them is right? It's not logical, it's psychological. That's how the mind works. So, now Vali is a classic example of judgment without understanding. No, this is one of the fundamental psychological weaknesses of all of us as finite human beings. Whenever a certain situation plays out in front of us, at that time, we judge that situation. Whenever a certain person behaves in a particular way in front of us, we judge that person's behavior. And often we judge it without understanding. So, to form an opinion without understanding itself is unfortunate. But to some extent, we have conditioned minds and we can't avoid it. That means, you know, if somebody is very sluggish and slow and always late, never comes on time, then you say you are a lazy person. So now, we can form an opinion. But to label a person, to judge a person, to condemn a person, to one who forms an opinion without understanding, is unfortunate. But one who forms a judgment without understanding is deadly. What happens is, Vali formed a judgment without understanding. And in our own lives, we will see that so many of our relationships, it's very easy to point out events when we were judged by others without being understood. But you know, if we think about it, we have also judged others without giving them the chance to explain themselves. So let's analyze this a little bit more. So how did the best of friends end up becoming the worst of enemies? So all of us suffer from this I am right disease. You know, we have tremendous faith in our own opinions and our judgments. Sometimes we may form our opinion in a fraction of a second.
But we don't abandon an opinion for the rest of our life. So, it is better to admit that I am wrong and be right, than to insist I am right and be wrong. So, actually, you know, it's natural to some extent to be attached to our opinions. You know, there are three modes: goodness, passion and ignorance. All of you have heard of these modes? So now in ignorance, we are attached to our laziness. You know, if somebody disturbs us with our sleep, nothing provokes us more than that. We are attached to our laziness, our inertia, our procrastination. In mode of passion, we are attached to our possessions, our positions, our pleasures, our treasures. In the mode of goodness, we are attached to our opinions. Our opinions and our judgments. This is subtle. Now, actually, to understand laziness as a material attachment is easy. To understand greed or attraction to wealth as a material attachment is easy. But to recognize our own opinion as an attachment is not so easy. Because it is in the mode of goodness. It is relatively subtler. But it is also an attachment. And, you know, Vali was not sinful. Vali was a virtuous person. In fact, he is an expansion of Indra. And he is also a devotee. But even a devotee, you know, we are not talking here of a conflict between the dark and light's powers. The good and the bad. Here both are good. Vali is also an expansion of a devotee, of a devata, and Sugriva is also an expansion of a devata. So here we see the misunderstanding that takes place between two people who are both virtuous. So this is very similar to what happens or what can happen in our lives. So you know, it's always safe to not pass a judgment. Whenever we see something happening, you know, this is called as, in psychology, as attributional error. Attributional error means what? We see a particular behavior and we attribute a particular cause to that behavior. No, somebody oversleeps. Why? Because he's lazy. If I oversleep, I was tired. So, the same behavior, somebody overeats. Why? He's a glutton. If I overeat, I was hungry. Can't you understand? So, you know, same behavior, what happens is, we give ourselves the benefit of doubt. And we don't give others the benefit of doubt. We are very quick to fix labels on people and pass judgments on them. So, you know, it requires courage to stand up and speak. It also requires courage to sit down and hear. You know, because sit down and hear means, if you want to say somebody else is wrong, it requires courage to tell the public assembly you are wrong. But you know, the same person is telling us that I am wrong, it requires courage to hear that also. So, actually, it is a very weak person who is attached to his opinions. And it requires strength to even consider the possibility that I might be wrong in my judgments about others. That's the first stage, to recognize this not as a demeaning of ourselves. You know, to admit that I am wrong is not to demean ourselves. It is actually to free ourselves from our erroneous perceptions. Free ourselves from our conditionings which create those erroneous perceptions. So, I am right is a disease. And when we see it like that, then we can become detached from it. Then, what happens is, once we pass a judgment about a person, then we start talking about each other rather than talking with each other. That means, you know, if two people have a problem, then instead of clarifying with each other, they start, you know, this person is like this and he does like this and he does like that and he does like that. And what happens when we speak, if there is A and B, and if B speaks about A something negative to C or D or E, that eventually goes back to you. And then what happens? Oh, you are speaking like this about me. So our very talking about that person in that way perpetuates that behavior. So what happens is, this is a very tragic thing. We start talking about each other. Now, the Valmiki Ramayana doesn't describe it, but later Ramayana retellings describe that actually, when Vali just banished Sugriva out, there were other ministers, there were other citizens, and those ministers knew that Sugriva had no intention to usurp the throne. He had accepted the throne, not with cunning, but with reluctance. But Vali did not hear them, did not allow them to speak. He started imposing his version of the story as the reality. So he started talking, this Sugriva is such a rascal. His own brother, he wants to kill and usurp the throne. He starts talking about each other. If he had just allowed Sugriva to speak and heard him and tried to understand his perspective, then the whole problem could have been avoided. So, now we may have opinions about different people. And our opinions about, we may have opinion about how the Prime Minister managed the Kashmir crisis. Now that is not a serious problem, whether our opinion is right or wrong. Because that opinion is inconsequential. It doesn't really matter whether we think the Prime Minister will be right or wrong or in between. But, our opinions about the people who are in our close circle, our relatives, our friends, our colleagues, our spiritual guides, our spiritual friends, these matter to us. Because based on our opinions, we will behave accordingly. Consciously or subconsciously. Whatever is in our heart will come out. That's why when Vibhishan, we'll discuss about this later in the second class tomorrow, that when Vibhishan came to surrender, at that time everybody else was suspecting him. But Hanuman said, from his face, from his words and from his gestures, I do not see any deception in his heart. So what is in our heart will eventually come out. It cannot be hidden for very long. That's why if somebody has behaved in a way that has hurt us, somebody made a promise and they didn't keep the promise, and then you promised that you would bring this for me, you would promise this, do this for me, but you didn't do it. And that makes us feel, you don't care for me. That person is like this, like that. And start talking. Instead of talking about them, go and approach them. And how we approach them also is very important. You are such a forgetful, irresponsible, uncaring, insensitive person. My God. What will happen? That is like permanently sealing that relationship, Actually, our speech should build bridges, not build valleys. Isn't it? Sometimes what happens is, that sort of speech is worse than not speaking only. Now, if our speech is just accusing others, then that does create further problems. But, if you just tell, last time I was expecting that you would come at this time, and when you didn't come, it upset my whole schedule, and I felt very irritated. When we present it in a non-accusing but factual way, I felt very disturbed, I felt very disappointed by this. And that person, nobody actually, at least among our close relationships, and if we are in devotee circles, nobody intentionally wants to hurt anyone else. So, and we can just, and that person will also become apologetic. Oh, I'm sorry, I never knew this would create so much disturbance for you. I never knew that this would make you feel like this. That was not my intention. And the whole thing gets resolved at that point itself. See, in relationships, things have a tendency to snowball. A snowball, when it is on the top of a hill, it is so tiny that you can just kick it and it will crack into pieces. But as it keeps gathering down, going down, it keeps gathering more and more snow. And by the time it comes to the bottom of the hill, it may be so big that it can crush a whole person underneath it. Now, many times in those countries where snow falls, if there are villages at the foothills of the where the snow is there on the mountain, then they have machines which break the snow so that the snowball where it forms, it will not go right into the villages. So, similarly, when a small perception is there, at that time clarification is just like going and kicking the snowball. But when that what does it mean the snowball gathers snow as it goes down? Now, once we form a particular perception about a person, we start looking for behaviors and speeches that reinforce that perception. It is one thing to do fault finding. It is quite another to do fault imagining. So now, fault imagining means there is no fault, but because we have particular perception, we start seeing this in a particular way. So, somebody, we may think that, you know, this person doesn't respect me. And then, that person is walking by and doesn't even look at us. See, I knew he doesn't respect me. But that person didn't even notice that I was there. But what happens is, once a perception is there, it gets reinforced. So a neophyte means new fight. Always making new fights. Never has to fight. A neophyte is interested more in proving that he is right than in knowing what is right. So that was the unfortunate thing that happened with Wali. And then eventually what happened? You know, it became a terrible enmity. They were brothers. Each of them was ready to lay down their life for the other person. Sometimes this happens in divorces, you know. Their husband and wife, they live together and so much love and affection, and then small misunderstandings keep growing, and then there are battles across the lawyer's table and there are battles in the court cases, and they can become mortal enemies. So we check right in the beginning. Clarify. So now, when Lord Ram was searching for Sita, he came to Kishkinda. And when he came to Kishkinda, it was almost several days since Sita had been abducted, and still there was no trace. So Lord Ram was lamenting in sheer distress. And at that time, his lamentations were heard on top of the Rishyamukh mountain by Sugriva, who had just gone out to get some fruits. And then he looked and saw these majestic looking personalities who were dressed like ascetics but were carrying weapons. So immediately ran back and told Hanuman and the other monkey assistants, "I think Wali has sent somebody to kill me." See how paranoid he had become. There's no visible connection between Wali and these two ascetics. But that's what happens, you know. When Sugriva became paranoid. Paranoid means perpetually fearful. So then Hanuman came out. And Hanuman looked down from the mountain. He said, "What indeed is there to fear? These are two ascetics. And they look very virtuous and majestic. I don't think they intend any harm to you." So Sugriva said, "One can never trust a king. You know, they may send very innocent looking agents who will have the most dangerous intentions. It's better you go and check." He said, "You disguise yourself and find out who they are and what their motives are." So Hanuman disguised himself as a Brahmin priest, and he appeared in front of Ram and Lakshman, and he started speaking. Now, remember, he had education from Suryadeva and he was his best student. All time best. So, he started speaking in refined Sanskrit. And very sweet, melodic tone. And he said that, "Now, who are you, O illustrious personalities? You know, although you are wearing the dress of ascetics, but I feel you are Raj Rishis, royal sages. Your arms are powerful. The bows on your arms are gigantic, as are the formidable swords hanging in your waist. Your presence here is a great mystery, yet you are most welcome. Kindly reveal who you are so that I can assist you in your mission." As he was speaking like this, just hearing his speech, Ram turned to Lakshman. He said, "This Brahmin seems to have mastered every facet of learning. His grammar is meticulously correct. His speech is precisely pronounced. Indeed, my anxiety is vanishing just by hearing his sweet speech. His speech has such potency that even an enemy with upraised weapons will put down the weapons and embrace him on hearing him such speech." Now, I cannot reproduce the sweet Sanskrit speech in English. So that's why what Lord Ram is saying appeared an exaggeration. But Chanakya Pandit says that if you want to conquer the world, more than any other attribute, if you need any attribute, it is sweet speech. Sweet speech doesn't mean that you have to lie and flatter, but we don't have to unnecessarily be critical and harsh. Anudvegakaram vakyam satyam priyahitam chayat. One of the austerities of speech that Lord Krishna describes in the 17th chapter, 14th verse is that anudvegakaram vakyam, non-agitating speech. And then Hanuman, as he was beholding Ram and Lakshman, especially Ram, you know, he had a great devotion to Vishnu from the beginning. And that same devotional emotion that he experienced in relationship with Vishnu, he started experiencing in relationship with Ram. And he told him, I feel that you are not just two royal princes, but I feel that you are two expansions of the Supreme Lord. Kindly tell me who you are. Then Ram turned to Lakshman and told him. And Lakshman told their whole story briefly. And as he remembered the exile of Ram and the travels that Ram had to go through. Travels, not travels. Travels means miseries. He had to go through in the forest and living austerely, and then finally the kidnapping of Sita. He started crying. Hanuman was moved to tears to hear this. And then finally he concluded by saying that we are looking for Sugriva. And Hanuman, all his tears vanished and he smiled. He said, it's the great fortune of Sugriva that you are seeking his alliance. And I am the minister of Sugriva. And I will take them to him. Take you to him now. So if you are on top of the mountain, please sit on my shoulders and I will take you. So we can imagine the fortune of Hanumanji. You know, we hanker for one particle of the dust from the ground which has touched the feet of the Lord. But not just the dust from the Lord's lotus feet, the Lord's lotus feet were touching his body. And not just 1 foot, not just 2 feet, but 4 feet. You know, Ram and Lakshman both. And Hanumanji was cherishing that moment. And he could fly very quickly, but he flew gradually. Because he wanted to cherish that service to the Lord. And then Sugriva was waiting anxiously. And he introduced both of them to each other. And Sugriva was overjoyed. And he said, it is my great honor to be of assistance to you. And then at that time they made a pact. You know, commitments should always be written down. Or at least solidified. So when they made a pact, immediately he said, Hanuman, he was not, although he had dressed like a Brahmin, he also had Brahminical knowledge. So immediately lit a sacred fire and started chanting mantras. And Ram and Sugriva joined their hands together, palms together, and went around the fire to sanctify their bond. So even among friends, if we make commitments, we should take the commitments very seriously. And in the Vedic culture, there is nothing more serious than actually sanctifying a bond by a promise by going around a sacred fire. So then, as they were going around the sacred fire, at that time, the left sides of Sita, Ravana, and Vali, wherever they were in different parts of the world, they started twitching. Now, there is a big science of Mangal and Amangal. So, if the right side of a male twitches, that indicates auspiciousness. And if the left side of a female twitches, that indicates auspiciousness. So the left side of Sita was twitching, that indicated auspiciousness for her. And for Ravana and Vali, that indicated inauspiciousness. And then they made their plan. And then Vali, Lord Rama asked, you know, why has Vali banished you like this? And then he told his whole story. And then Lord Ram told, you go ahead and challenge Vali. And then I'll be behind and I will kill him. So Sugriva went to Kishkindha and he said, Vali, you coward! Where are you? Come right away and I will show you the way to death. Now, Vali was there in his palace and he was enraged. You know, a Kshatriya cannot tolerate anything more than a challenge. Anything like a challenge. Just his blood boils. You know, so then immediately he jumped over and he came. And both of them started fighting. It was a tumultuous and terrible fight. But gradually, Vali gained the upper hand. And Sugriva was waiting, waiting, waiting. There's no sign of Ram helping him anyway. And then, somehow, you know, Vali was about to pound him and using all his remaining strength, just pushed Vali away and ran and ran and ran. And Vali was saying, you came to challenge our power, why are you running away now? And Sugriva didn't hear anything, just ran and ran and ran right into the 4-mile radius where he was protected. Actually, Later on, it is described that in the, when the Vanaras had to be sent out to search for Sita, so at that time, Sugriva was giving the speech, telling, okay, Angada, you go on the north, Mahinda, you go here, you go there, like that. And he was telling, when you go in the east, you will find this mountain. And to scale this mountain, there is a pass over here. And then you will come to this river. And this river is narrow in this area. Then you can cross over here. And he gives detailed descriptions of what all the Vanaras will find in all the four directions. So Lord Ram is hearing this and he afterwards tells, hey, your knowledge of geography is great, huh?
That's Sugriva. This is not geography lesson, this is a life lesson for me. Said, actually, Wali was not only banished me, but he still felt suspicious of me. And he felt that I will still try to betray him and try to make some plot, some conspiracy to kill him and take up the throne again.
So he would try to kill me. And to escape from him, I ran all over the world trying to find some hiding place. And that's why, because I was searching for a life, for a place to save my life, I was very, very attentive. So actually, you know, Krishna's plans are so mysterious that at that time, when Sugriva was running for his life, he was only thinking of saving his life. And he thought that what a big trouble I got into. I was running for my life, I was supposed to be a royal family. At that time, it appeared like a big problem for him. But later on, his problem turned out to be his strength. You know, he could guide all his vanaras. In the mission of finding Sita. So, what may appear to be a problem for us right now, who knows? That may become a strength for us to serve the Lord in the future. So, you know, if someone has been addicted, you know, that getting free of that addiction is very difficult. And some devotees, it's just miraculous. They are addicted to something, they start chanting and it goes away. And then some devotees have to struggle, whatever addiction it might be. It might be something serious, it might be something not so serious, but whatever it is, if our attachments are not going away, we think, why? Other devotees are just marching forwards. But if we have to struggle to give up our attachments, then maybe later on, when we have to guide and counsel and help others, you know, if we have just been effortlessly able to give up our attachments, our bad habits or whatever, then if somebody is struggling to give up their bad habits, we feel, hey, why are you so attached? But if we had to struggle and give it up, we can be more sympathetic. So, whatever be our situation, we should just try to think, how can I do the best that I can in the service of the Lord? So, Sugriva went all around the planet and couldn't find any place to hide. Finally came back to near Kishkind itself. And there, actually a demon named Rindavi had come to challenge Wali. And Wali had defeated and destroyed him. And then, after destroying him, he just took his corpse. It had come in the form of a buffalo and whirled it into the air and threw it away. And as that bloody corpse was flying through the air, some drops fell in the ashram of Matanga Rishi. And when Matanga Rishi was doing his sacrifices, that was desacralized, you know, that was made polluted by the drops of blood falling over there. So Matanga Rishi, by his mystic vision, understood what had happened. Now he did not become angry with Wali for killing Bandubi. That was a virtuous act to do. But he became angry with the arrogance of Wali, because of which he, after killing him, wanted to flaunt his strength and show the whole world that the corpse is flying, just see my prowess. And because of that, he cursed him. If you come within an 4 mile radius of this ashram, then you will turn into stone, because you are stone-like in sensitivity, because of your arrogance. And that's why Wali couldn't come inside. And that was where Sugriva was staying. So Sugriva ran for his life and went back into the area of the Pampa Sarovar. And then Wali left him. This time I will spare you, next time I will not spare you, he said. And then Sugriva went back to where Lord Ram was, and he said, you know, if you didn't want to help me, at least, you know, I have said I will help you. Why did you have to get me beaten like this? So actually, what had happened was, Lord Ram, when Sugriva had been introduced to Lord Ram, so at that time, Sugriva had immediately offered a seat made of a salt tree branch to Lord Ram. But he had neglected Lakshmana. and he was himself a king, so he had a saltry seat, and that had annoyed Lord Ram. And Hanuman had noticed, Hanuman was very sharp and perceptive, he had noticed the annoyance of Lord Ram and immediately had brought another bronze seat to offer to Lakshman, and that had pleased Lord Ram. So Lord Ram felt that it is somebody who does not respect, now Lakshman to some extent is like the guru, the Guru Tattva, somebody who does not respect my associates, my representatives, my aides, he is not pleased with them. And that's why, because he has disrespected Lakshman, he deserves a thrashing. So that's why Lord Ram allowed him to be thrashed. And he told him that, but Lord Ram acted innocent. He said, actually I couldn't recognize you. Now, how can the Lord not recognize? He knows everyone. He said, you are just two identical personality, just like the two Ashwini Kumaras. So you do one thing, you wear some distinguishing mark. So he told Lakshman, you make they get a flowering creeper. And Sugriva went forward. And as he went forward to wear that creeper from Lakshman's hand, he had to bow down to Lakshman. So when he bowed down like that, Lord Ram was satisfied. So he offered his respects to Lakshman, and he also got the mercy of Lakshman. So like that, when we are going for some service, even the service is a service for the Lord. But we should not just go for the service of the Lord, we should take the blessings of the devotees of the Lord. So Srila Prabhupada, when he went to America, it was the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to fulfill that. But just before he went to America, he went to Mayapur. And a whole day he was there in Mayapur, at the samadhi of his spiritual master. Chanting, praying, begging for mercy. And then he went abroad. So, it's a long story, but we'll come to the important part of it now. So anyway, the second time Lord Ram went, Lord Ram told Sugriva to go, and Sugriva went, and again he challenged, Vali, you coward, come out. And immediately Vali sprang up from his bed, and then immediately Tara, his wife, caught him, and he said, her womanly intuition told her something is wrong. He said, just now you bet your brother, and how has he come back again? I think the only reason he has come back is, he must have found a powerful ally on whom he is relying. So our spies have informed, now you will see in this whole passage, Tara is a very intelligent lady. This, our spies have informed us that he has formed an alliance with Ram. And they have told Ram is so powerful that he has already killed extremely powerful demons. In fact, Jagasthani has single-handedly killed 40,000 demons. So, my dear Lord, I feel, please, you should not go for this fight, for I fear it will be your last. Sugriva is not your enemy, I feel he is your friend, and so is Ram. Please, instead of fighting with Sugriva, welcome him and welcome Ram into your kingdom. And they will be your best well-wishers. So, Vali could not tolerate the insolence of Sugriva. He said, how can I tolerate if somebody is coming to challenge me to not go for a fight? Yet his arrogance came in his way again. Kshatriya arrogance. And he told, as far as Ram is concerned, you don't worry. I know him, he's a virtuous king, and he will not interfere between the battle of others. And I have not harmed him in any way. And then Vali marched out, and both his fists were clubbed together, and he said, he saw Sugriva standing over there, this fist will expel your life air, you coward. Come, you coward, Sugriva said, this fist will expel your life air before that. And their fists collided together. It was like clash of thunder. And as they fought furiously again, Sugriva was overpowered. And he fell on the ground. He was wondering, is Ram going to help? Or is there going to be some problem again? He said, but as he was fallen, and Vali was right on top of him, about to pummel him down. At that time, Lord Ram was watching from the thick, from the forest. He saw his opportunity and shot an arrow. As the arrow was released, it was like a thunderbolt being released. It whizzed through the air at the speed of lightning. And it entered into the body of Vali. Vali's body was so strong. You know, when he would collide with mountains, the mountains would crack. But that body, when it entered, it was like another thunderbolt being struck. And Vali fell to the ground with a cry. And became unconscious. And his cry as he fell reverberated in all the directions. And then Sugriva and Ram Sugriva got up and Lord Ram marched slowly towards him. When Vali came back to consciousness, he saw Sugriva standing in front of him and he saw behind Ram. Shocked. He said, what with whatever strength he had, although Lord Ram's arrow, we discussed Amoghasharam, it is infallible. But Vali was wearing a necklace that had been given to him by Indra. And that necklace had the blessing that whoever wore that necklace would not die. So as long as that necklace was there on his body, although he was mortally wounded, life had not left him. But he was in immense pain. With whatever energy he had, he spoke. He shouted, spat out the words, Ram, I had heard that you are virtuous, but today you have proved yourself to be the disgrace of your family. How could you be so vicious that you attacked me when I had not wronged you in any way? When I was engaged in a fair combat with another? How have you fallen so low? I think it is the result of bad association. Because you are associated with this evil-minded Sugriva, so you have become contaminated. Indeed, you will have to suffer forever in hell because of your vicious deed. And as the arrow in his chest burned like fire, and he fell back. He was remembering the words of Tara and he felt, if only I had heard her words. Still he was deeply shocked at the action of Ram. And then Ram very calmly spoke. It is true that when the body's strength deteriorates, at that time the intelligence also becomes weak. Otherwise you would not have spoken foolish words like these. Now Lord Ram's character is exemplary throughout. And that's why, you know, people who want to find faults, they harp on this incident. No, this is immoral, they say. There are a couple of incidents, this and then maybe the banishment of Sita. Second time. So, after the Agni Pariksha. That is what they harp on. We'll try to discuss them in the future classes. But Lord Ram said, but if you look at the reality, just see what is Lord Ram's consciousness. Lord Ram says, this whole world is created by the Supreme Lord. He's not saying I am the Supreme Lord. It's created by the Supreme Lord. And he has entrusted it to the Kshatriya race for protection of the order. So Manu has entrusted this task and Manu has given it to the Raghu Amsha. In the Raghu Amsha, Bharat is the current king. And I and Lakshman are his servants. And it is our duty to make sure that in the kingdom of Bharat, law and order is maintained. No. Although Sugriva was innocent, you humiliated him, dispossessed him and exiled him, although he had no fault. Not only that, you cohabited with his wife. And for an older brother to cohabit with the wife of his younger brother is like cohabiting with his own daughter or with the wife of his own son. And for this immoral act, you deserve to die. And as the servant of the king, I have done the right thing by giving you the due punishment. If I had not punished you, then you would have to go to hell and suffer for the reaction. And I, as the king, for not having administered justice, would also have to suffer. But now, you have been freed from the sinful reaction. And for the past piety that you have done, you will attain an auspicious destination accordingly. And as far as killing you, while you are engaged in a combat with another, the Vedic scriptures describe, Lord Ram is quoting the Vedic scriptures. Although he has written the Vedic scriptures, Vedanta Krit Veda Vireva Chaham, 15.15 the Bhagavad Gita describes, but Lord Ram is quoting the scriptures. He says that in the Vedic scriptures, he quotes Manusruti and several other books over there, he says that actually for one who is an Atataina means an aggressor. So in the Bhagavad Gita first chapter, Srila Prabhupada describes in the purports, those are aggressors. Somebody who steals one's property, somebody who abducts one's wife, somebody who attacks with weapons to kill, somebody who cheats in, there are somebody who tries to commit arson and things like that. Six activities are described. So these people, they are sinful because of their actions and they can be killed, and in killing them there is no sin. So as Lord Ram spoke, actually, in the Valmiki Ramayana, Vali's accusations and Lord Ram's explanation, they form quite a significant section. I'm only explaining it briefly over here. But then, Vali fell silent when he heard this. And now, here is a significant thing. Actually, Vali in his heart knew that I have wronged Sugriva. That at least there was a doubt in his heart. You know, perhaps Sugriva might be innocent. But in the fury he had taken the decision, he had banished Sugriva. And he could not even consider the fact that it was wrong. That he was wrong. And now, when both his arguments had been shattered and his physical strength had also been overpowered. So now, that illusion which he had built around himself, that was broken. And the remorse came out. The remorse came out. And Lord Ram's arrow not only pierced his heart and killed him physically, but it purified his heart of his arrogance. And because of that, you see the remarkable transformation of heart. In one of the later Rama retellings is described that Lord Ram tells Vali, he says, if you feel that I have done wrong in shooting this arrow to kill you, you tell me right now. I will take this arrow back and I will give you back life. At that time, Vali, he folds his hand and says, my dear Lord, lives will come and go, but a death like this is rare to come. A death with you present in with your sight is something which will not come in life after life. I do not want life, my dear. Let this death come. Let the way you have dispensed justice be the way things go forward. As Vali's remarkable change of heart is actually very indicative of the potency of devotional service. Although Vali did not perform any devotional service consciously, but just the Lord's presence purified him. And then what all did he do? You know, Vali, actually he was lying down there in great pain. At that time he turned to Sugriva. First he said, wrote to Lord Ram and he said, my dear Lord, the enmity that I bore towards Sugriva was because of my own mistake. So Angada should not be victimized for this. Angada is innocent, and please tell Sugriva to not harm Angad in any way. Please tell him also to take care of Tara and to take her guidance. She is very intelligent. And I should not have neglected her counsel. And then when Sugriva, although that enmity was there, but below that enmity, still that brotherly affection was there. You know, his heart was crying internally. And then Vali, you know, this was his last breath, he was in great pain. But he turned to Sugriva and he said, oh brother, please forgive me. I have dealt with you most unfairly. Rule over the kingdom in justice. And treat Angada as your own son. And then he turned to Angada and he said, serve Sugriva just as you have served me. And try to satisfy Ram as the Lord of your life. And then he took out that necklace. Now naturally, for a father, who will he give his necklace to? He'll give it to his son. You know, when Kaikeyi brings the news, Kaikeyi gets the news from Mathura that Ram is going to be coronated. And then Kaikeyi is so happy. He says, you know, you have brought such good news for me. Here, take this jewel necklace. And Mathura throws down, you foolish lady. You don't understand the way politics works. It's a whole mind that is political. You know, there's no politics over there at all. But anyway, she says, what's wrong? Kaikeyi says, if Ram becomes the king, Ram and Bharat love each other so much. After Ram, Bharat will become the king. He says, you foolish lady, you don't understand. The affection with brothers stays, between brothers stays only as long as they don't have their own families. Once the brothers get married, they have their wives and their children, then the affection that they have for their brothers shifts to their wives and children. And once Ram becomes the king, after him Bharat will never become the king. Ram's son will become the king. And Bharat will be forever deprived. He'll have to be the servant of the king. And his sons will have to be the servants of their sons. And his grandsons will have to be the servant of the grandsons. So actually, Mantara was empowered at that time to deliver Kaikeyi. But the point here is that, you know, it's natural for Wali to have given that necklace which assured immortality, to his own son Angad. But he took out that necklace and gave it to Sugriva. And he gave it to Sugriva. That, you know, completely indicated that he was actually genuinely, sincerely repentant. He gave that necklace to Sugriva, and as soon as that necklace left his hand, immediately he fell back. With eyes beholding the form of Lord Ram, he departed from this world. And then everybody started lamenting. Sugriva went and fell at the feet of Ram and he said, "Alas, I am the vilest of all creatures. My brother was so powerful that he had the opportunity to kill me many times. But he let me flee and he let me live. But I, at the very first opportunity to kill him, I killed him. I will be guilty of fratricide, killing my own brother. And not only that, I will be guilty of killing a virtuous king. For these two sins, the only reaction, the only atonement that I see is that in the same funeral pyre that Wali is going to burn, let me also burn in that fire and end my life." So it is not that Sugriva was delighting. Now I got the kingdom. No, not at all. Sugriva was lamenting. Because there was dormant affection between both of them. So, actually, then Sugriva personally, he was so bewildered that he didn't know what to do. Lord Ram consoled him and told him that time is the supreme controller in this world and time makes different people move in different ways. Time has ordained that Wali go to his next destination as per his deeds. And that same time ordains that you now perform the final rites of Wali. And in due course, you take the throne and lead the kingdom. So Sugriva was still bewildered. And then Lakshman told him, make arrangements for the funeral ceremony. And they got a huge palanquin. And Sugriva personally carried one side. Angada carried another side. And then they went, led the funeral ceremony. And then Lord Ram was invited. Hanuman told Lord Ram, he says, it is by your prowess that Sugriva has got back the kingdom. Please come and stay in the kingdom. Lord Ram became very stern and he said, on the order of my father, I cannot enter even a village, leave alone a kingdom. I will stay in the forest. Let the 4 months of the rainy season pass and then let the search for Sita begin. So see, Lord Ram is completely detached. It's not that he wants to grab the kingdom, nor is Sugriva wanting to grab the kingdom. Actually, both of them are very, very hurt by what happens. So now if we commit a mistake, how do we make amends? Actually, Wali made complete amends. The first thing he did was accept. And Lord Ram refuted all his arguments. He didn't try to counter and justify. He sincerely apologized to Lord Ram, to his brother Sugriva. And then, correct yourself. Now, he could not correct the fact that he had exiled Sugriva. But what he could do was, he could grant immortality, practically speaking, invincibility to Sugriva. And that's what he did by giving him that necklace. Satsarup Maharaj describes a very beautiful incident. Not beautiful, instructive incident. It was not beautiful for him. It was heartrending for him. But when we look back in retrospect, it's beautiful. So he was the secretary of Srila Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada would dictate his letters. And actually, Srila Prabhupada rarely if ever used phones. And he would run an international movement just by writing letters. The letters were of critical importance. And in the early days of his call, now, there was a special bell in the temple. That bell would be rung when a letter from Prabhupada would come. It could be to any devotee in the temple. If a letter would come, the bell would be rung and all the devotees, whatever service they were doing, they would drop it and they would come running. And because they were all living for Prabhupada, to please him, to know more about him, to think about what they could do to satisfy his desires. That was the ultimate goal of their lives. They would all come running and they would all hear what Prabhupada had written in the letter. So, any letter that Prabhupada wrote to anyone, that letter would be cyclostyle and sent to all the centers all over the world at that time. And everybody would get to read that letter. So, Prabhupada had written a letter, dictated it, Satsuru Maharaj had written it, and sent that letter. I don't remember exactly to whom it had sent it. But Prabhupada had written a letter to somebody like Gargamuni, Gargamuni Prabhu. And Prabhupada had said that, I'm answering this question briefly, and I have answered this question in another letter to Brahmanand Prabhu. And I am attaching that letter with this. And Prabhupada called Satsuru Maharaj and he said, did you not attach that letter to Brahmananda? And Satsuru Maharaj first couldn't remember only. Did you not attach that letter? No, Prabhupada. How can you do such a thing? I am writing the letter that I am attaching, and how can you not attach a letter like that? So, Prabhupada, actually, I searched for the letter, but you had written that letter when the previous secretary was there. And he had not kept the letter carefully, so I couldn't find the letter. Does that mean you send the letter like that only? In the letter it is said that something is attached, and you are not attaching it. How can you send the letter like that? So Satsuru Maharaj, he had never seen Prabhupada such an old or angry mood. And he was very young at that time. Now we see with Sannyasi, he was very young. He started crying. And he thought that crying will decrease Prabhupada's anger. Prabhupada, why are you crying? Why are you not answering my question? And that made him even more, almost heartbroken. For him it was like the end of the world. And Prabhupada was just unrelenting. How can you send a letter like this? And then finally, Satsuma was racking his brain, you know, what to say, what to do. He finally said, Prabhupada, I think I am not serious about my service to you. And when he spoke that, Prabhupada's expression completely changed. From anger, it just changed to total disappointment. And Prabhupada just walked away from there. And Satsuma thought, my God, I did something worse than this. And then actually, you know, Prabhupada later on said, you know, our love is shown by our seriousness in service. You know, when we do a service seriously, it indicates that we take the relationship seriously. And that means we are serious about that love. So, he had not thought of all that at that time. He just thought, how can I somehow pacify Prabhupada? But Prabhupada left. Then he went to the deities and prayed, what should I do? And then finally he came back and he told Prabhupada, Prabhupada was still quite grave. And he was afraid Prabhupada will get angry again. He said, Prabhupada, I will write a letter to Gargamuni and tell him that it was my mistake that I did not attach that letter. And I will also write a letter to Brahmanand Prabhu and get a copy of that letter and send it to Gargamuni Prabhu. Prabhupada said, good. And Prabhupada smiled and very smiley felt so relieved. And then Prabhupada never again referred to that incident. So he draws these three lessons. He says, actually, when we commit a mistake, how can we make amends? So there's no use trying to justify. Just accept. Like, I made that mistake. And then after that, apologize. Genuinely, sincerely apologize. He apologized to Prabhupada. And then after that, there's no use crying. So Prabhupada was very practical in that sense. Prabhupada did not like the sentimentality of crying. He said, okay, what can you do to correct it? We can't correct. Okay, the letter is gone. You can't stop that. But we can make damage minimization. So he said something practical which could be done to correct it. And Prabhupada fully accepted it. So with respect to sending a letter, it seems to be a trivial matter. Although, with respect to the spiritual master, it is not trivial. But with respect to relationships, these three simple things. But if you do them, the whole animosity will go away. Now you can just imagine, just a few minutes before, Vali and Sugri were fighting with each other, ready to kill each other. And a few minutes later, when Vali just spoke these words, what happened? When Vali died, Sugri was trying to kill Vali. But when Vali died, Sugri was said, I will die with him. So the whole animosity evaporated. So, that's what these small steps, although for Vali it took near death to do that. Hopefully for us, in our relationships, it doesn't have to go to that extreme. We can learn the lesson and make sure that first of all we don't pass judgments on people without proper understanding. And even if we pass judgments, you know, we make amends as soon as we understand. And in this way, you know, when there are nice relationships between devotees, that is very pleasing to the Lord. And Srila Prabhupada also said that, you know, your love for me will be shown by how you cooperate. Now, we cannot cooperate artificially if we are internally having grudges and perceptions. So what we have to do is internally, we have to correct those perceptions and avoid fault finding and avoid fault imagining. And of course, as devotees, Krishna will orchestrate things in such a way that we ultimately attain a auspicious destination. But why should we go through trauma before that? If we can avoid it, it will be the best. And what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, you know, how do we avoid the judgment? How do we avoid the fault finding? Trinadapi sunichena tarorapi sahishtuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Although this is difficult, but actually not practicing it makes life even more difficult. So, material life is never an easy choice. You know, either we choose one difficulty or we have to choose a worse difficulty. So although this is difficult, if we try to practice it, Krishna will help us and Krishna will save us from so many potential misunderstandings. And then we can go through life as smoothly as possible. And ultimately, attain the darshan of the sumukham surudam sulabham sukadam. The beautiful face, the beautiful hearted, the powerful, graceful Supreme Lord, Sri Ramachandra, Sri Krishna, as per our Swarupa. So I'll quickly summarize. I started by talking about how the Ramayana, the different sources of the Ramayana, Valmiki Ramayana, the foundational, and there are other retellings also. We discussed about how from the scriptures, we just get purified by hearing the past tense. Literal narration itself is purifying, but we can also learn ethical lessons from it. And there are also metaphorical lessons that can be derived. So we focused on the ethical aspect, and we discussed about how friends, not just friends, brothers, life friends, they became enemies. Why? Judgment without understanding. And how does that happen? That is because one becomes conditioned to the I am right disease. And then afterwards, one is bent on proving I am right rather than finding out what is right. And this happened between devotees. And because Vali still had some sort of devotion, so his heart was purified. So we see that the other demons whom the Lord killed, they went back to Godhead. But they never reformed before they went back to Godhead. Or they went to the Brahma Jyoti, wherever. But Vali, because he was not basically evil, so he reformed before death itself. And we discussed, if we at all commit a mistake, accept it, apologize, and correct. And then we can actually we'll find the animosity can evaporate. It may not happen so fast, but it will happen. And then the key to this is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells us, Trinadapi sunichena. So thank you very much. Are there any questions? Yes, Rumi. You can have a mic. Okay. How then did Ramayana take place? Jiva Goswami describes that it happened in the 25th Manvantara. See, now what is happening is we are in the I just tell it briefly. See, we have this Satyuga, Tritayuga, Dwaparayuga, Kaliyuga. So now what is happening is Kaliyuga. Before that was Tritayuga when Lord Ramchandra appeared. Lord Krishna Chandra appeared. Before that was Dwapar Yuga. Before that was Satyuga. So this is the 28th cycle like this. So Jiva Goswami explains, he quotes some verses and some sources for that. He says that Ramayana happened in the 25th cycle, 25th Yuga. So that's quite a long way away. Now you'll have to calculate the years. I have not calculated that, but you can calculate that based on the Satyuga, Tritayuga, Dwapar Yuga. But many of the landmarks can still be there because when the yuga changes, there's not necessarily a pralaya. You know, when Satyuga, Tritayuga, Dwaparayuga, there's a pralaya when Brahmaji goes to sleep. But at the end of one Divya Yuga, there's not necessarily a pralaya. 100 Divya Yugas make one day of Brahma. So at the end of the day of Brahma, there is a pralaya, the lower 11 planetary systems are destroyed. At the end of a life of Brahma, the whole universe is destroyed. But there's not such a big pralaya. So Ayodhya can still be there. Lanka can still be there. They are relatively similar. Some topographical features may change. That means the Sharayu might have been here, it might shift a little over there. That has happened with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, places also. The Ganga was at one place, it shifted to another place. But overall, the places remain the same. Now, that's the first question. What was the second question?
Oh, sure.
It's described that Lord Ram, I think 36,000 years he ruled after that. After attaining the kingdom, he ruled for 36,000 years. And then he voluntarily retired and he went back to the spiritual world. Hundred thousand years, yeah. So now, when the Lord comes, the Lord performs. If Lord Krishna also did not, if he says in Dwapar Yuga, he did not live for 1,000 years. When the Lord comes, he is not governed by the laws. And also, we have to understand that, you know, this is when you say 100 years, 1,000 years, 10,000 years, it's not exactly mathematical precision. It's not that 1,000 years, you fall down dead. Before that, you are fully healthy. That's an average figure. It's not that somebody is having a count, you know, 1,000. Now your heart should stop beating. It's not exactly like that. That is a general lifespan. So in Kali Yuga also, 100 is a general lifespan. Now because we are terribly manipulating nature and devastating nature practically. So it's gone down further. But when the Lord comes, he's independent of these roles. He can choose to be here for as long as he wants. Yeah, good question. Yeah. Correct. Yeah.
Like Ramcharitmanas is only 500 years.
Correct.
But this Ramayana is lakhs of years, maybe even more than crore years. So how those are preserved? And Valmiki wrote them even before Rama appeared. That is what I have heard.
It's parallel. Sort of parallel. I will not go into that part. But there are two things in this. First is that the modern way of thinking and the ancient way of thinking are radically opposite. For example, you know, according to the modern way of thinking, the discovery of the development of spectacles is a sign of advancement. Because now people who are less sighted can see. But from the ancient way of thinking, it's a sign of decline. That people wear spectacles is a sign of decline of human ability. That we could develop spectacles, we can say it's a sign of the progress of human ability to manipulate matter and create technology. But there are two different ways of looking at things. So similarly, you know, from the modern point of view, if we look at the modern idea of history, writing is considered a significant breakthrough, significant step forward. That once man started writing, then he could preserve things. But from the traditional point of view, writing is considered a step down. That man required to write means that his memory had declined. So in the earlier ages, the sages were Shruti Dhara. Shruti Dhara means they could remember, hear, and Shruti is hear and Dhara is to hold. So whatever they could hear, they would hold it. So these verses, there is the Ramayana, the Mahabharata, the Puranas, the Shrutis, all these, they would be heard and they would be memorized and they would be relished and cherished. And that's how they would pass down generation after generation. So to us, oral transmission appears very incredible sometimes because, you know, we think it may be like a Chinese whispers game. That it will get changed continuously. But it's not like that. Because they understood that the potency of the sound vibrations and they would preserve it. And ultimately, even if from a textual point of view, we can say that, oh, the verses, the manuscript here and the manuscript there are different. That is not so important. See, as I said, the literal aspect also is purifying. But the literal aspect is not all that there is to it. For example, now, I know some verses which are different. In our Bhagavatam, Prabhupada's Bhagavatam, for example, the first prayer in Prahlad Maharaj's prayer, I think 7.9.5, Brahma daya suragana munayotha siddha sattvaikatam gatayo vachasam pravahai naradhitum puruganair adhuna pipipru kim toshtu marhati same hari rugra jate. So, Prahlad Maharaj is praying, my dear Lord, you know, Brahma and other devatas have offered such wonderful prayers to you. If they could not satisfy you, how can I satisfy you? So now, among the Sri Vaishnavas in South India, the same verse is, Brahma dayasuragana munayotha siddha sattvaikatan gatayo vachasam pravahai. So in our Bhagavatam it is matayo, sattvaikatam matayo vachasam pravahai. There it is sattvaikatam gatayo. sorry, as is gatayo, there is matayo. But if you see from the grammar point of view, it means the same. Sattvaikatam gatayo vachasam pravahi. That the words are flowing with the gati of sattva. Or matayo, those who are sattva, their mati, their itlis was coming out through the flow of their words. So the essential meaning doesn't change. And more important than that also, you know, even if there are small, these are called as manuscript differences. Even if these manuscript differences are there, the important thing is the essential message is the same. And how do we know that essential message is the same? A simple way. For example, now we take medicines. According to statistics, anything between 1 out of 3 to 1 out of 5 medicines are counterfeit. You know, but how do I know whether the medicine which I am going to take is right or is bona fide or not? You know, if I decide, I will retrace back what path did it come, which pharmacist, which wholesaler, which transport agency, which go down, which manufacturing unit. It's such a messy process. You know, and it's practically not possible. But if I take the medicine, if it's a cough medicine, it cures my cough, it's fine. It's a correct medicine. If it doesn't, it doesn't. The same way, that means a particular medicine is supposed to, is promising a particular effect. If that effect is coming, the medicine is bona fide. If that effect is not coming, it is not bona fide. So now, if we look at the Bhagavad Gita, which is spoken by Krishna, what is the effect that we see of the speaking of the Bhagavad Gita? Two effects we can see. Arjuna gave up all his idea, personal ideas of what dharma is, what duty is, what activity is. And he just decided to do what Krishna is doing. And he accepted Krishna as the supreme personality of Godhead, as the ultimate goal of life. Now today, 5,000 years later, we see when Srila Prabhupada went to America and spoke the Bhagavad Gita. What happened? People had their own ideas of dharma, their own ideas of duty, their own ideas of what they had to do in life. Those who heard it, understood it, they gave up their ideas and they accepted pure devotional service to Krishna as the mainstay of their life. And they had different ideas of divinity. They accepted Krishna as the supreme personality of Godhead and made him the goal of their lives. So whatever effect happened on the original student of the Bhagavad Gita is seen to be happening on the students of the Gita today. So that way we can understand that the essential message has not been changed. So even if somebody critically argues that all the manuscripts have changed, it's possible. But still the essential message has not been changed because it has been preserved in the parampara. Okay? Yeah, Valmiki taught it to Lavakush, they were his first students, and he taught many other students also. Now it is described that Vedavyas wrote everything down, including the Valmiki Ramayana. Valmiki Ramayana was composed by Valmiki, but writing down was done by Vedavyas itself. Any other questions? Yes, Prune, last question.
Prabhuji, Vedic civilization is existing from time immemorial. So why don't we see practice of Vedas in other parts of the world other than India and
practice? Oh, there is a lot of practice in the sense that if you just go on the net and search for Russian Veda, no, there are so many sites which describe it, and the contents of that Veda are very similar to our Veda. Now, if you go to the Angkor Wat, that is the world's biggest temple. That is not in India. That is in Cambodia. Cambodia? Cambodia, yeah. And you know, there have been in the second biggest, the Gizeh is the biggest pyramid, Sphinx is the second biggest pyramid. There, on that thing, is a Sphinx, the 2.22 verse of the Bhagavad Gita, Nainam Chindan Chastradi, that is written there. It's there right now. And not only that, just a few years ago, in Times of India, news had come that a deity of Vishnu was found in Russia, way up in Siberia, sort of, nearly in Siberia. So there have been lot of findings of the global existence of Vedic culture. If you read Dr. Michael Cremo, Dutta Karma Prabhu's book, Human Devolution, there is a chapter, Similarities in Cross-Cultural Cosmology. It gives a lot of similarities. There are conceptual similarities, but archaeological similarities have also been found. Now one thing we have to understand is that I'll answer your question in two parts. One is, there are archaeological similarities and they can be found. I give a few examples and there are many more also. If you visit the site hinduwisdomonline.com, It's not an ISKCON site, it's just written by some Hindus. But that gives many more correlations between Greece and India, Mesopotamia and India, like that. Lot of things are given. But more important than this historical analysis is the universality of the principles. You know, the principle that you are not the body or the soul, it is not restricted to India, nor that restricted to 2010. It is a universal principle that transcends space and time. So we should not depend on material evidence or evidence of material universality for principles that are universal independent of their material status. You understand this point, what I'm saying? This is a universal principle. It doesn't depend on, you know, whether you are body or soul. That doesn't depend on whether people all over the world believe it or not. If it is true, it is true. If it is not true, it is not true. But the fact is, there is significant evidence for this. Now, one thing, from the Vedic point of view, 5,000 years ago, when the Mahabharata war took place, after that, there was tremendous devastation. And because of that devastation, Babarakshit was the next king, and the kings after that, Janmejaya onwards, they were relatively weak kings. And because they were weak, so Hastinapur, which was the capital of the whole world had its own rulers. But he was like the ruler of the ruler, the emperor. So the other kings, they started gradually breaking away. Because the hold of the Hastinapur king became weak. And because of that, gradually changes in culture started happening. One of the biggest similarities is language. Now, Sanskrit, Greek and Roman, they are remarkably similar. And H.H. Williams has said that, actually Sanskrit is richer, more copious than Greek and more better structured than Latin. So, the linguistic similarities are remarkable. In my book, Science and Spirituality, there's an article called The Untapped Glory of India. So, where I describe, you know, so many Western scholars, they are profusely glorifying India. Sanskrit language, the Indian culture, the Indian scriptures. But that was just before the British took power. Once the British took power, then their imperial interests came up. And they started using their imperial interest to misinterpret the scriptures. They had a goal to westernize, modernize and Christianize India. And because of that, India is still not recovered from that. And we don't know about the glory of our own scriptures till we are fortunate enough to come with some in contact with some spiritual institute which teaches us that. In India, we don't study the Bhagavad Gita. Isn't it? It's only in India that, you know, we call our own national heritage as a religion and put it aside. You know, even if it is a religion, what does it not make us a national heritage? So from an objective point of view, we should study our heritage. People all over the world are studying it. So it's unfortunate. You know, this Dr. P.C. Rao, Dr. Rao, who did the archaeological findings in Dwarka, you know, he told that, you know, there are precious findings over there, we can find it. But over something like 9 years, he got funds to do some 11 expeditions. So we don't get funds. Otherwise, there can be so much research done and so much findings can be done. But ultimately, we practice the principles, we use our intelligence to evaluate, and you'll find the principles are sensible and universal. That's the most important thing. Okay? Thank you very much. Shri Ramachandra Bhagavan ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, Chai Gaur Premanande.
Hare Krishna, the prasadam is on the first floor. All of you, please take your prasadam on the first floor. First floor, there's a life membership hall, this is there, no? Number one hall, yeah.
Hare Krishna, how are you? Yeah, they have.